The following message is copyrighted by Westminster Theological Seminary. Duplication, distribution, or other use of all or any part of this message is not permitted without prior written consent. Please direct your inquiries to communications@wts.edu. For all other information, please visit the main website at www.wts.edu.
Okay, couple things on this related to aesthetics. A definition that I would give, at least as far as I could go with what art is that art is expression, and I would go one step further, and I would say art is expression with intention. Now, any of you have gotten into these art, what is art kind of discussions, it gets crazy. And frankly, usually that's where I step out. I guess I've been around that one time too many, and I suffer from vertigo. Or maybe it's artigo. I don't know. Okay, sorry. But there are three basic elements to it. These are intuitively obvious, but it's good to say. And that is that there's the artist, there's the art, and there's the audience. There's actually two types of audiences. The one audience are the people who see what we do, and the other is God who sees what we do, which is the higher one. So the art is what we might call the content, and the artist and the audience is the context of the doing of that art. And any process, and this ties in with things that we've already talked about, is that if I'm going to be authentic and utilize the styles that are going to connect, if I'm going to write a song or whatever it is, I have to have the audience in mind because that's a context. I fit within that context. If I come out and I go, and if I did that long enough, you know, at first it's interesting, and they go, where's he going from there? But it's a context that is it's ill-adapted to the context of the audience. They don't understand the language. They don't understand the purpose of it, all of that. They don't see how it fits. There's the artist, then. We'll start here. Under art defined expression with intention, there's the artist. The things that are going to influence what's going on is going to be his personal background. That's going to affect the kind of words that he chooses, how he goes about picking those lyrics, how the kind of style of music that he ends up choosing, he or she. The psychological makeup is going to impact whether the person is really angry that day about the political system because of the fact that something really happened to them that really gets them mad, you know, if it's, you know, maybe it's the time of month or something else, you know, that psychological makeup, if that anger is actually an extension of a problem this person has with his father, that's going to affect this artist. And that in turn is going to affect what's communicated to you and how you in fact end up understanding it. It can really make an important effect. Philosophical and theological angle. As this artist is seeking to do what this is trying to do, is what I think I see what in fact is intended? Has the artist in fact betrayed himself and said more than what he consciously may have intended? In other words, if I'm trying to understand the artist of what's going on, now here I am, I'm sitting in the sort of critic's seat, you know, I'm listening to this music, and I'm trying to evaluate what's going on. If I understand the artist, it may help me connect the dots better for what they're trying to say. And so I understand why they're saying it the way they are. I wouldn't say it that. Why did Bruce Coburn swear the way he does? Why does he swear in every album? He bugs me because he swears so much. He does. It comes out every once in a while. Yeah. They go, oh man, great. You know, I don't use that language. And it kind of offends me. But then I think about who he is and the culture that he's a part of and what is sort of considered okay within his culture, and it makes me at least adapt a little. And especially when I think about why he wrote the one that was sort of got out, it was called If I Had a Rocket Launcher. And if and in that song, If I Had a Rocket Launcher, he uses this expression of anger, and he uses these words. And I'm listening, and if I realize that he was there among the people that were being oppressed at the time that he was writing this, and he said, if I had a rocket launcher, somebody's going to die because I'm so mad. Does that mean, I go, Bruce Coburn, wait a minute, you're a Christian. Blessed are the peacemakers. You're not supposed to be, you know, the idea of you wanting to take revenge on other people. He says in concert, he goes, I wish I never had that feeling again. But at the time, he felt that. That really hit him. So he, as an artist, was trying to express that. I wish that somehow the next song on the album would have said, I wish I never had that feeling again. That would have helped him to make himself more understood. But I can understand why he said what he said when he did it, in the light of the context, his background. We are quick to judge. And the reason why I'm saying this is when you go through the whole process in ministry or what you're about, and you're evaluating other people that you listen to, people that are going to be, quote, acceptable or unacceptable for ministry, especially, please listen before you make your pass your judgment on this person and what they're saying and what they're about. And that person may need some help. I'll give you a good example of this. There was an artist that was here years ago who came to do a concert here at the seminary. And when the concert was finished, I went up to him and talked to him. Because I felt, in the light of what I was hearing him, what he was doing, I felt that he, this relates to betraying himself, that he was betraying who he was. And that what he was saying was not what he was, it wasn't extending from who he was. And he was confusing the audience because he was confused. And so I told him that. And it was really cool because he said, oh, you know what, I'm actually leaving this band. This is one of my last performances. I'm going back into ministry in a different way. So that was, in a sense, confirming to him. You know, that was good. He was betraying himself. And as an artist, I want that feedback. Not every day, but I want that feedback. The art, textual, aesthetic, and ethical. The art itself. The textual is the plot, what is being said, the point, what is meant, the purpose, the significance of the point as you're trying to look at a piece or a song or whatever. You evaluate it in that way. The art itself has a text. And the purpose is not only to understand what is said, but then to get to the point of translating what's said to saying, okay, now what is the point? And then to go back, go one step further and say, is this, how significant is this point, you know? How does this fit into the scheme of things? And that could be helpful. Aesthetic. How is it said in terms of the style and the skill in which it's done? Ethical. Should it be said? Is it true? In other words, are the facts right? Is it right? In other words, are the values, are there godly values within it? What are the values at work? So there are little comments down below that sort of flesh that out. We're going to move on to the next section, which is, and this is all, I'll tell you why we're doing this. We're simply going through this whole process of saying that if we're going to look at music and we're going to look at ministry, in order to understand music, we see it as art in that sense of that there are dynamics or elements involved in that whole process. And if we engage ourselves in the process in one point or another, this will help us either to understand the artist to understand both the artist, the art, and now the viewer, the listener, yourself. Literacy. Do I have the necessary language tools to understand what's being said? It's often the case that people walk away from stuff or cross it off because they don't understand it. They may not have the tools to understand it. That even means even a stylistic, the genre in which that music is communicated. I hate country music. Have you listened to it? Do you understand the roots of country music? Have you gone through that whole process of giving it a fair listen and a fair read so that you can have some perspective on it? Do you have the tools to be able to evaluate it in that kind of way? That sort of thing. And that relates to a lot of other aspects about that piece of art. The moment. The moment. What present mood or attitude am I bringing to this as I'm listening right now? That helps you put it in perspective. Something you ate, you walked in because you were really mad at your wife or whatever. I mean, you were really you just had an argument with your wife. You walk into the concert, it was a bad concert. Or it could even work the other way around. You walked into, you had an argument with your wife, you walk in, and it's the best concert you've ever been to. Why? Because you can escape in the concert from that problem that you just had. It could go either way. But it's helpful to know your mood. It's going to affect how you respond to something in a given time. Because it may mean, I want to go back to this and listen to it again. The culture, how does my life situation, my Sitzimleben, hey, there's that word, yeah. Culture, country, modernity, race, urban versus suburban, age group, church background, family background. What is the situation in which this, in which I live that affects how it is that I'm listening to what's going on? My aesthetics. How do my own personal likes and dislikes affect my view here? One of the issues is it's too loud. I just can't listen to it. It's too loud. I was just at a concert last night of the Samples. I don't know if you've heard of the Samples. And, you know, if it's too loud, bring earplugs. I have some earplugs that I bring to things. And you can listen to a concert just fine. It just tones down the sound without the quality of the sound. It's just fine. Some people like, I'll tell you what I like. I like to feel the bass hit my rib cage. It's sort of like, why do you like to do that? I don't know. Why do you like to drink soda? I like to feel the bubbles go down my throat as much as I like to drink, you know, the cool drink. Why is it sweet? There's an aesthetic involved. And it impacts my body, and I like that. That's kind of neat. I kind of feel the music. Why do you have to? Well, you don't always have to, but it's round and round. Okay, and then my starting point. What is my view of reality, truth, self, and God? Which I think you all understand in terms of presuppositions that I bring to bear as I'm looking at this particular situation. Okay, now I want to go to this other one. Yeah. This is distilled, and I do mean distilled. This is the kind of thing people write books about, if they have the time. A distilled theological framework regarding the arts. art is an expression with intent, and I even add a new thing to it, and thus communication, even a communication of non-communication. You can communicate, you can do an art thing to say people don't relate to each other, and so I'm going to do something that doesn't relate to anything or anybody. And I'm going to make something nobody will understand. And it's a communication of non-communication. I'm saying something. Even I put a dot on a canvas. I'm still saying something. It's a colored canvas. I'm still saying something. There's an intention, and there's even a communication. The communication is, I don't want you to know anything about who I am. I'm just doing a beautiful color. Why? Because that's important to me. Well, that's communication. It should be important to you. That's why I made it big, so that you just sit there and look at it. So there's communication. Or, you know, it could be, again, non-communication. Imaging. If art is expression with intent, it must therefore be seen as a process of imaging by the artist, extending himself by naming or unnaming. We've talked about naming a little bit. We talked about being named in terms of as an extension of the personhood of God, personally naming us as individuals. Not only calling us image of God, but calling each of us by name, and with that name, even giving us a new name. Writing it on this stone, that personal naming. that God names. And in that, it's if art is expression with intent, it must therefore be seen as a process of imaging by the artist. As God names us, so too we name what we deal with. It's an extension of our authority. And you guys, I'm sure, some of you have done a study on what naming, that whole process in Genesis, is about, how that naming is the substance of what that's about. And that it gives both meaning to that of which is around you. It also puts a stamp of your authority on that. And that's why he named animals and various other things like that. But it could also be unnaming. A process of unnaming is sort of disclaiming and taking away the names of things, to actually taking away the meaning of things. And artists are engaged in that process of removing meaning, thinking that all is meaningless or a lot, that there is no substantive meaning to it. Imaging of the glory spirit. Consider the Tower of Babel or Nebuchadnezzar, a man making a name for himself in his own image. Let us make a name for ourselves. And so they build this tower to make a name for themselves. They name themselves, when in fact it was God who is the one that gives them a name and proclaims that name. They name themselves. And in that Tower of Babel or Nebuchadnezzar, as he makes a name for himself to spread that out, you compare these with Genesis chapter 1 or Acts chapter 2, we see that the image of the glory spirit, as the image falls upon, as the spirit of God falls upon the created, upon this lump of clay and breathes life into it, there is this replicating of, by the Spirit of God, of the image of God upon that of which he has made. And so, as it is called image of God, or as in Acts chapter 2, when the glory Spirit of God descends upon the disciples in the upper room, and you see that the tongues of fire resting on each one, and the recognition of the presence of the glory Spirit of God there, that is to make a people for himself that is going to reflect the image, the restored image of who it is that he is. A redeemed, restored, put back together, not a bent image, but a straightened image. And in the turn, they are disciples sent out to bring the reality of that glory spirit presence into the lives of others. And so there is that imaging from God through us to others of that replication process. Creation of the world, the new creation, our imaging by the self-replicating glory spirit. Genesis 1, in our image, God created us. Psalm 19, the heavens are declaring the glories of God. Romans 1, the invisible attributes being seen. Therefore, if any man be in Christ, he is a new creation. Not autonomously creating his own reality, not self-originating, but reflective. And that's really, 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 really important. It's what makes the Christian artist what a Christian artist is made to be. Non-Christian, for that matter, who doesn't know the Spirit of God, stumbles along and being albeit a marred image of God, he can't help, even still, it comes out of the cracks, so to speak, that the glory of God is still going to be shown in a person who does not have a relationship with God, because he's created in the image of God anyway. Whether he likes it or not, whether he wants it to show or not, it will show. I remember a wonderful worship experience that I had, and I've had several like this, but when I was, I listened to Chick Corea and Gary Burton playing some jazz over at Princeton University. One on the piano and the other on vibes. And I was listening, and somewhere in the middle of the concert, all of a sudden my eyes were into heaven and I was praising God. I I didn't know how I got... all of a sudden I realized, oh my goodness, I'm praising God. I'm worshiping God. This is a worship experience because the heavens are declaring the glories of God. And even, albeit through fallen man, a marred image, nonetheless, God's image is being shown. How much more so through the Christian who has the presence of the Spirit of God, who replicates that image and brings and reproduces that image in others. How much more so should that process of the Christian therefore be not autonomous and apart from the Creator? I'm going to make a name for myself. I'm going to make a song for myself. But rather, from Him, I express the image of God. I express the glory of God through that music. God is in the process, in that whole process of doing that, whatever that may mean. And we are in the process of being transformed, and so our imaging transforms. All right, now I have four categories, and these actually is just one way of framing this, but... creation, fall, redemption, and consummation. In the process of doing of art, of the doing of art, that one, we look at creation. Man is imago Dei. He is image of God. Genesis chapter 1. It's Bruce Coburn writes in Rumors of Glory about man, and the tape itself is called Humans. And this song, in that context, is called Rumors of Glory. And it says, you plunge your hand in, you pull it back scorched. And like, you plunge your hand into a furnace. You pull it back scorched. Something is shining like gold, but better. Rumors of glory. That in all of us, there is rumors of glory in the image of God. In all of us. Which enables us to appreciate, albeit a secular artist or a Christian artist, to appreciate art that's an extension of the imago Dei. We can worship God in the light of it. We can learn from a secular artist's perspective and skill. He has the same struggles, and we can identify with him because he's a fellow human. There's a yearning in him, and we can relate to that yearning, because even though we've found Christ, we yearn so much, we yearn for heaven, we want to get, you know, the whole business. You guys understand what it's like to have the blues as Christian? The Apostle Paul certainly did in Romans chapter 7, didn't he? Oh, wretched man that I am! that saved a wretch like, amazing grace, that saved a wretch like me. But, oh, wretched man that I am, I get caught up. Release me. This is not my home. I'm just passing through. I got to keep looking ahead because it hurts in the valley of the shadow of death. I need not fear any evil, but it's around me. And sometimes I see it in me. And I get confused. And I feel the pain. And I sing about it. And I write about it. And I see it in others. Others who don't even know him. And I see it in them, and I go, I can relate to that. So we learn from a secular artist's struggles, from his even stumbling on some answers, even though he doesn't have the full picture together, and maybe not see how it all connects, and that he's skillful, and even often more perceptive than we are about things. It happens. So often it happens. They can say it better than we can. Number two, another thing that adds to our dimension and understanding about art is the fall. Man is fallen. Man is self-referential, he's self-preoccupied, he's not truly free, therefore, art is tainted. We'll see it over and over. And therefore, I will struggle. You will struggle and dislike and even hate the way things are expressed. And even the movements in music you will not like at all, or in art you will not like at all. you'll struggle with it or you'll hate it, because sin permeates all that we do. It affects what we do, and how much more so in someone who doesn't know the Lord. But it affects it all. So, as a result, therefore, if art is tainted, therefore, you will not only hate some things or struggle with it, but you may walk out, you may not attend something, you may weep over something, you may get furious about something. Being whole person. Redemption, number three. God redeems us to redeem his world. We are to be transforming influences. The Christian, as redeemed and under restoration, therefore is better able to reflect true creativity by analogy, thinking God's thoughts after him. Better able, I said better able, what does that mean? Because I see a whole lot, I mean, I tend to I have more secular music than I do Christian music, I mean, in terms of by artists. I have much more in that realm, and I tend to, today, presently, buy more from the secular artists than I do from the Christian, because it's technically and aesthetically better, and sometimes it even sounds more human. Sometimes there's struggles, and it is not as superficial. It seems a lot more authentic. That's not to say that's the way it should be, because actually, if the Christian is connected to his God, the creator of the universe, then the creator, the sub-creator, should have an inside line on creativity, like nobody's business, in terms of substance, goodness, and sensitivity and perception. No question about it. It should be that way. I wish that the and you've heard this over and over, but I'll say it too. I wish that we would stop trying to copycat the secular market. I just wish that we would be authentic. And even now it's become copycatting their marketing strategy as much as anything else. I think we can learn technically from that, yes. But I think that there is something very unique about the Christian that the Christian has in his relationship with God that should transform it, and that actually Christians should be on the front line, front running in terms of creative exercise and enterprise. Okay, thankfully there are some that are, like Van Morrison as a good example. I really have not read in Rolling Stone magazine a bad review of Van Morrison. They love him. And I love them loving him, because there's something there, authentic and substantial. Therefore, we should rethink the premises of art in our world to ensure that our investment is reflective of God's intent. In the second page, our endeavors are to be God-dependent and corporately accountable, transcultural within our culture, and relationally intended. God-dependent, not autonomous. God is a part of that process. Corporately accountable. The mentality about the artist is he's a loner and on his own. But the mentality of the scriptures is that he's woven into the fabric as a Christian artist of God's body. One part in a whole. Transcultural within our culture. Which means that he's able to bring God's transcultural perspectives into our culture, things that last.
That seems to be the nature of adoption in the New Testament. We are adopted into the body of Christ. Yes, that ultimately brings great glory, hopefully, to the one who has adopted us. But the adoptee has been honored in a magnificent way as he has been called to be the child of this particular prominent person. Imaging is about incredible honor. If you ever look at your...
Transcultural within our culture, which means that he's able to bring God's transcultural perspectives into our culture. things that last and relationally intended. If any artist should be seen as someone who has this, sets people before themselves, that seeks to have a relationship with the people they work with, it should be the artist, the Christian artist, not the non-Christian. And the interesting thing is this guy, Bruce Coburn, I'm proud to say, has a reputation. He's a Canadian artist. He's done many, many albums. I'm proud to say he has a reputation as not only a musician's musician, but he is, he was like voted number one by the teachers as being the teacher's teacher over at Berklee's School of Music, which is an incredible school of music. Not only that, I mean, as a guitar teacher, but he, from what I understand, as the reputation has come back to me through circles that I've heard, that he is, people see him with real integrity as a Christian in his field. They just respect him. It's the way he carries himself, the way he treats others, what he seeks to do, maybe the issues he even gets into. He's very passionate about his faith. It's exciting. Relationally intended. 4, consummation. We are living in the now and then of redemption. Therefore, as aesthetics can have a propensity to rivet us to the moment, our aim should be to recognize and to express that there is more, that there is more, temporally as well as existentially. There is more. This is not all there is. And it should come out somehow. I want to see if I can play this. Doesn't want to do it. Why? Maybe I don't want to play it. You get this. I hear this in Christians all the time. I hear Bruce Coburn able then to deal with a lot of pain, and then all of a sudden you see, but there's hope. He talks about, this is so depressing, all of a sudden, but he's got some other hope. This is not my home. He's just passing through. Jesus is returning. There's more. There's more. And the Christian should bring that out. Implications is, as a listener, I like Enya, but she's not a Christian, and her perspective is not. What should I do as a Christian? Either you separate, or you pick the bones, or you capitulate. What do you do as a listener? Do you cave in? Do you say, okay, well, that must mean that there's really no difference between her and me. I like her music, and therefore there's no real difference. So my faith is just sort of a cultural thing, and it really makes no difference. Or, oh no, I'm a Christian. I don't listen to that stuff. I've been there. I threw out all my secular stuff at one point in my life. Broke it all. Or we say, I really do like what she does. I wish she wouldn't say that. I know this is what she thinks. I know this is where she comes from, and I don't agree with that. But isn't it amazing what she can do? And I appreciate that. It'd be great if she knew the Lord. That sort of thing. As someone who's in formal ministry, I really want to encourage you to cultivate your mentality and your heart in how you relate to people in this area of aesthetics. It takes a discernment, obviously, to, and you get a lot of that while you're here at seminary, to sort of be able to smell when something's off, you know, theologically, that doesn't fit, you know, that's not right. But then to also say, but at the same time, this person is made in the image of God. What can I accept and even respect? What can I not accept and not respect? And what do I do about that? And the challenge is to be incarnational. Culturally, we must learn to understand the language of this culture. And we must learn to speak it, just as Jesus did. Forget all that under there, except I want to say one thing. Our culture is definitely Christophobic. They are really afraid of, as a culture, they're really afraid of Christians, specifically evangelical Christendom. That evangelical word is really anathema. It doesn't work within the culture, pretty much, especially Northeast. There's a lot of fear about that. And I feel like part of my business is earning the right to be heard and disarming that fear over and over and over and over again, changing their perspective. Whatever they thought a Christian was, guess what? They just got surprised. Somebody was saying to, I just heard this talk of what would Jesus say to Madonna? It was the title of the talk. And it was an interesting talk. At one point, what the person said that I really appreciated, and as an apologetic approach, was, you say to me that you could never believe in a God like that. If you would tell me what that God is, what that God is like that you think I believe, I bet I wouldn't be able to believe in that God either. Did you get that? I think that's really important because there's a vast misunderstanding about, I think, in this culture, about what it is that we're about and what we believe. And one of the things that really hurts is our quick judging and misunderstanding and not being able to speak the language that they speak. We want them to speak our language. That's not the way Jesus was. Transcultural, we must learn to speak redemptively and not be swallowed up in the process of assimilation. And that can take some pay some high prices for that. I think one of the prices I've paid, actually, in recognition, the thing that I did, would not capitulate on is fame. I still haven't made a CD yet. But is, why do I want to get up in front of people? I have this gift. I want to share it, yes. But what do I want from that? Why? For you, God, baptize what I'm doing and let me go. Rather, I'm going, God, baptize what I'm doing and let me go. No, it's the way it should be is, as God's person, what is your values for me and your calling for me? And am I content to then step ahead where you want me to go in that? Be it finding myself with my name in lights or with my name in obscurity. It goes either way. I know people, I live in Greenwich, Connecticut, and there are a lot of very wealthy people. And some of those wealthy people feel incredibly distraught about the fact that they have wealth. And the interesting thing from my perspective, and their assumption is to get rid of it and that they should get rid of it and go into the ministry. My thinking is, where has God called you? Has God called you with this wealth as a steward, or to call you away from it so that it is not your God, but that He is? It could go either way. It's the same thing with fame and that sort of thing. Well, I've given you some things to think about, and I in some ways, I feel like I wish that we had a little bit more time for questions and answers, the way of going actually into applying some of this into specific areas of ministry, be it worship or I've spent a lot of time on outreach and evangelism, talked a lot about that relating to the non-Christian world. But and I have all these things I never even played, but I didn't expect to. There are some great, there are neat names up here. If you're interested in the kind of style of stuff that I've been throwing at you, you may jot the names down and go check them out. Take down the name of the actual CD and not just the artist, because these are actually good representations of those artists.
Do you think you could, at your convenience, write down, make a list of 20 artists and put the CDs that you think any educated, modern Christian should be aware of, whether to like it or not?
Yeah, I can, and I'd be more than happy to do that. There's a person, by the way, he sounds almost contemporary Christian, kind of off those kind of labels, that I want you to pay attention to. It's not what I'm putting on right now, but his name is Rob Mathis. He's from Greenwich, and he's very gifted. If you ever see that name, hear that name, get his stuff. It will be the kind of thing for parishioners that your parishioners will love. What's his style? Kind of pop gospel kind of style, but he has some good. He plays in bars all the time, but he's translated this now into his playing. But he's just a genius in terms of music understanding and whatnot. So he's very good. Thank you very much for having me. And while you go, I'm actually going to play the first track on this thing called Handel's Messiah. You know this, right? It's soulful. Have you played it for everybody? Have you heard this?
Yeah.
It's fun. Because I never even touched, really. I really didn't touch black.
The first time I heard it. Did you like it,
Yeah, it kind of ruined me. But, I was singing in Messiah when I first heard that. I was like,
You don't have to hang here. You can get up and go, but if you want to...